Chapter 28. Somehow or other, I brought Heemskerk's name into conversation, and, to my great surprise, startled Miss Freya. Her eyes expressed something like distress, while she bit her lip, as if to contain an explosion of laughter. Oh, yes. Heemskerk was at the bungalow at the same time with Jasper, but he arrived the day after. He left the same day as the brig, but a few hours later. What a nuisance he must have been to you too, I said feelingly. Her eyes flashed at me a sort of frightened merriment, and suddenly she exploded into a clear burst of laughter. Eh, ha, ha! I echoed it heartily, but not with the game charming tone. Eh, ha, ha! ... isn't he grotesque? Ha, ha, ha! And the ludicrousness of old Nelson's inanely fierce round eyes in association with his conciliatory manner to the lieutenant presenting itself to my mind brought on another fit. He looks, I spluttered, he looks ha, 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 amongst you three ... like an unhappy black beetle. Ha, ha, ha. She gave out another ringing peal, ran off into her own room, and slammed the door behind her, leaving me profoundly astounded. I stopped laughing at once. What's the joke? Asked old Nelson's voice, halfway down the steps. He came up, sat down, and blew out his cheeks, looking inexpressibly fatuous. But I didn't want to laugh anymore. And what on earth, I asked myself. Have we been laughing at in this uncontrollable fashion? I felt suddenly depressed. Oh, yes. Freya had started it. The girl's overwrought, I thought. And really one couldn't wonder at it. I had no answer to old Nelson's question, but he was too aggrieved at Jasper's visit to think of anything else. He as good as asked me whether I wouldn't undertake to hint to Jasper that he was not wanted at the Seven Isles group. I declared that it was not necessary. From certain circumstances which had come to my knowledge lately, I had reason to think that he would not be much troubled by Jasper Allen in the future. He emitted an earnest thank God, which nearly set me laughing again, but he did not brighten up proportionately. It seemed Heemskerk had taken special pains to make himself disagreeable. The lieutenant had frightened old Nelson very much, by expressing a sinister wonder at the government permitting a white man to settle down in that part at all. Tea is against our declared policy, he had remarked. He had also charged him with being in reality no better than an Englishman. He had even tried to pick a quarrel with him for not learning to speak Dutch. I told him I was too old to learn now, sighed out old Nelson or Nielsen, dismally. He said I ought to have learned Dutch long before. I had been making my living in Dutch dependencies. It was disgraceful of me not to speak Dutch, he said. He was as savage with me as if I had been a Chinaman. It was plain he had been viciously badgered. He did not mention how many bottles of his best claret he had offered upon the altar of conciliation. It must have been a generous libation. But old Nelson, or Nielsen, was really hospitable. He didn't mind that, and I only regretted that this virtue should be lavished on the lieutenant commander of the Neptune. I longed to tell him that in all probability he would be relieved from Heemskerk's visitations also. I did not do so only from the fear absurd, I admit, of arousing some sort of suspicion in his mind. As if with this guileless comedy father such a thing were possible. Strangely enough, the last words on the subject of Heemskerk were spoken by Freya, and in that very sense. The lieutenant was turning up persistently in old Nelson's conversation at dinner. At last I muttered a half-audible, "Am the lieutenant." I could see that the girl was getting exasperated too. And he wasn't well at all, was he, Freya? Old Nelson went on moaning. Perhaps it was that which made him so snappish. Hey, Freya? He looked very bad when he left us so suddenly. His liver must be in a bad state too. Oh, he will end by getting over it, said Freya impatiently. And he do leave off worrying about him, Papa. Very likely you won't see much of him for a long time to come. The look she gave me in exchange for my discreet smile had no hidden mirth in it. Her eyes seemed hollowed, her face gone wan in a couple of hours. We had been laughing too much. Overwrought by the approach of the decisive moment. After all, sincere, courageous, and self-reliant as she was, she must have felt both the passion and the compunction of her resolve. The very strength of love which had carried her up to that point must have put her under a great moral strain, in which there might have been a little simple remorse too. For she was honest, and there, across the table, sat poor old Nelson, or Nielsen, staring at her, round-eyed and so pathetically comic in his fierce aspect, as to touch the most lightsome heart. He retired early to his room, to soothe himself for a night's rest, by perusing his account books. We two remained on the veranda for another hour or so, but we exchanged only languid phrases on things without importance, as though we had been emotionally jaded by our long day's talk on the only momentous subject. And yet there was something she might have told a friend. But she didn't. We parted silently. She distrusted my masculine lack of common sense, perhaps. Oh, Freya. Going down the precipitous path to the landing stage, I was confronted in the shadows of boulders and bushes by a draped feminine figure whose appearance startled me at first. It glided into my way suddenly from behind a piece of rock. But in a moment it occurred to me that it could be no one else but Freya's maid, a half-caste Malacca Portuguese. One caught fleeting glimpses of her olive face and dazzling white teeth about the house. I had observed her at times from a distance, as she sat within call under the shade of some fruit trees, brushing and plaiting her long raven locks. It seemed to be the principal occupation of her leisure hours. We had often exchanged nods and smiles and a few words too. She was a pretty creature. And once I had watched her approvingly make funny and expressive grimaces behind Heemskirk's back. I understood, from Jasper, that she was in the secret, like a comedy camerista. She was to accompany Freya on her irregular way to matrimony, and thereafter happiness. Why should she be roaming by night near the cove, unless on some love affair of her own, I asked myself. But there was nobody suitable within the Seven Isles group, as far as I knew. It flashed upon me that it was myself as he had been lying in wait for. She hesitated, muffled from head to foot, shadowy and bashful. I advanced another pace, and how I felt is nobody's business. What is it? I asked, very low. Nobody knows I am here, she whispered. And nobody can see us, I whispered back. The murmur of words, I've been so frightened, reached me. Just then, 40 feet above our head, from the yet lighted veranda, unexpected and startling, Freya's voice rang out in a clear, imperious call. Antonia! With a stifled exclamation, the hesitating girl vanished out of the path. A bush nearby rustled, then silence. I waited wondering. The lights on the veranda went out. I waited a while longer, then continued down the path to my boat, wondering more than ever. I remember the occurrences of that visit especially, because this was the last time I saw the Nelson bungalow. On arriving at the Straits, I found cable messages which made it necessary for me to throw up my employment at a moment's notice, and go home at once. I had a desperate scramble to catch the mailboat which was due to leave next day, but I found time to write two short notes, one to Freya, the other to Jasper. Later on I wrote at length, this time to Alan alone. I got no answer. I hunted up then his brother, or, rather, half-brother, a solicitor in the city, a sallow, calm, little man who looked at me over his spectacles thoughtfully. Jasper was the only child of his father's second marriage, a transaction which had failed to commend itself to the first, grown-up family. You haven't heard for ages, I repeated, with secret annoyance. May I ask what for ages means in this connection? It means that I don't care whether I ever hear from him or not, retorted the little man of law, turning nasty suddenly. I could not blame Jasper for not wasting his time in correspondence with such an outrageous relative. But why didn't he write to me a decent sort of friend? After all, enough of a friend to find for his silence the excuse of forgetfulness natural to a state of transcendental bliss? I waited indulgently, but nothing ever came. And the East seemed to drop out of my life without an echo, like a stone falling into a well of prodigious depth. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.